Hello and welcome to Island Extras. I'm Susan McCabe, and like many of you, I spend every day these days living with an undercurrent that I might be experiencing the end of the world. With me today is Michael Mead, mythologist and storyteller, who has a different perspective on our current climate situation, along with politics. Welcome, Michael.
Good to be with you, Susan.
So you are doing a tour with a presentation, if you want to call it that, called Chaos, Climate, and Creation. You will be here on Vashon Island, November 13th at the Methodist Church at 7 p.m. Tell us what this different perspective you have might be.
Well, I try to suggest it in the title. So the first word is chaos, which I think everybody could recognize we're going through. It's extremely unusual to be alive at a time when nature is rattling and culture is unraveling. Very unusual to be in that kind of a moment when the two big forces in the world are on the downside part of any kind of cycle. And then climate is the word we're using to understand what's happening to everyone on Earth. But in a sense, climate is not the cause. It's not even the problem. It's the result of the causes and the problem. Climate is the symptom of what's happening.
What's happening? What is the cause?
Well, the cause has a lot more to do with the earth and the soil and the water. Climate is kind of made from the activity of the land and the activity of the water. And so all kinds of things are going wrong. A lot of it is that carbon that should be going down into the earth is going up into the air. And once again, the problem isn't carbon, it's carbon in the air when it would be better and serving a purpose in the earth and in the soil. So, and then the third word is creation. And that's where the mythology comes in, because in myth, chaos comes before creation. Disorder comes before the next order appears. So part of what I'm trying to say is we're in this period of tremendous disorder. And the problem isn't that the disorder is there, like a lot of people think it shouldn't be that way. But this has been coming for a long time. And so once it's here, then the issue is to learn how to tolerate and operate inside the disorder. Because from a mythological point of view, we're going through the collapse renewal of the world. And the next order of the world, which we have a chance to contribute to, is found in the depths of disorder of the current world.
When you say the world, do you mean the planet itself, or do you mean all of us inhabitants thereon?
World means both. So Earth... Well, planet, first of all, means wandering star. So that's a reminder to people that we live on a star and that there's a wobble in the motion of the star. And that little wobble is the evidence and the source of ongoing change. And so the wobbling of the world is from which the next iteration of the world comes. And so then planet is this wandering star, and then, which also reminds us that we're part of the cosmos, which is an important thing.
That is an important thing to remember, yes.
And so then the earth is the landmass on one level. It's the living biosphere on another. And the world means the land or the earth with all the iterations and complications of being and life on that planet. So world is more than the planet. It's the planet with all the beings. And part of what's going on in terms of what we're seeing through climate crisis is the loss of species, which includes, right now, they think already 40% of insects. And someone might say, well, I'm one of those people that gets stung by mosquitoes all the time, so I'm okay with that. But the real issue, of course, is that the insects are essential to the soil, to the plants, to the bees, and so on like that.
To the function of the planet.
You take away one of those segments that is an essence of life, and you begin to get a collapse, and that's what's happened to the soil too. So we have collapsing soil. The soil's been flattened, both because of industrial agriculture, but also because of all the concrete and stuff. And soil's supposed to be open and have air pockets, and it's supposed to be holding water in meaningful ways, and it's supposed to be the place where the carbon is integrated into life.
So you are saying that human activity is contributing largely to this collapse, to the chaos that we're experiencing.
Yeah.
Where do we go with that?
Well, I think there's lots of places we go, but the way I'm talking about, so first thing I'm saying is, from a mythological point of view, the world can't end. So science has its due. In other words, contemporary science is very good at gathering the data. They can gather the evidence, and that's why the argument over climate denial and climate crisis awareness involves accepting the science, because the science can be very accurate. But science has its own limits. The accurate collecting of information doesn't necessarily lead to the solution of what to do, because that requires imagination, and imagination is not part of the data system.
Uh-huh.
And so that's where the humans come in. And so one of the ways I approach it is, if we accept that we are contributing, or we have contributed to this great damage, then we must have the capacity to help heal it. And so in contrast to those people that say, well, a human being is just a speck in this huge cosmos, the old idea is a human being is a fully alive, deeply interconnected, potentially very imaginative, creative speck in the cosmos. If we did the damage, we could be working effectively at the solution. And so then I go from there to say, this is the largest, most inclusive event that I've seen in my life, more than the radical changes in the 60s, because this involves the entire planet.
Yeah.
And we don't even know beyond that what it might involve. Therefore, it means it involves all the species. It involves all the people, regardless of their place of origin, and regardless of their politics, it involves everyone. And so I'm calling that a potential collective rite of passage, that the job now is for humans to accept what's going on, and the chaos is seen in nature. I mean, it really is sad and disturbing, and it looks like the end of the world to
yes.
many people. And it's seen in the politics. It's seen in the economy. Everything has this disorder in it now, day by day. The reports are endless disorder, not just in the United States. It's around the world. It's at the poles. That's, you know, the ice caps. It's everywhere. And so you can see that as something to run away from, or we can see it as a call to awaken to a greater understanding of how the earth works, how the interconnection of all the beings and all the systems work, and a call to contribute to a reimagining of how we live and how we live together, that there's another world trying to form. So usually the idea of end of the world, nowadays they use the word apocalypse, which imagined usually as a fiery end to the world, which starts to seem more possible as the temperatures go up.
Yes, it does.
But apocalypse comes from the Greek apokalypsis, which means collapse renewal. It literally doesn't mean just collapse. It means collapse renewal. And then the other meaning of apokalypsis is lifting the veil. So the veil lifts, and you look at the science, and they say, oh, my God, we're losing a species every day. We have a collapse of various parts of the earth in terms of places where industrialization has come. That earth can no longer grow things in a meaningful way. We have the rising temperatures of the ocean and all the things that are happening, and these photos of all the plastics gathering in the
yes.
bottom of the ocean. That's all lifting of the veil. It's been happening for a long time, but now the veil lifts and you can see it. But the veil lifts and you can see the politics too. The things that were done in the back room, they're doing right out in front of everybody. And so the veil is lifting and you can see criminal behavior in political spheres. You can see all kinds of, you know, things that used to be hidden.
So how do you see the politics and the science interacting with one another. I kind of ask myself which came first, or how is it that we are facing this climate crisis and lifting the veil on it, as well as sort of lifting the veil on the politics of how it's happening. How do those two interact with one another?
Well, I see, if you stay at the science level, all of the contemporary, not all, but most of the contemporary science is fatalistic, because science isn't about imagining. It's about collecting data, and the data is all fatalistic. So if you stay at that level, you can wind up really in despair. They have climate anxiety now. They have climate neurosis. They have climate despair. And those are all, you know,
yeah, we're all walking
places
around.
Yeah, it's all over. It's in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So you have the atmosphere is climate disturbed, and then the political atmosphere is a poisonous atmosphere also. You have mirrors. One mirrors the other.
Oh.
So then I separate them this way. If you stay at the political level, like the next election and the time between now and then is going to be unbelievable. It's going to be very disturbing. And the election's going to be very troubled. But let's hope people vote in meaningful ways and vote for enhancing life and including everybody. That would be my hope.
I would like that.
But that does not solve the problems. And it's going to be very difficult to get committees to think in terms of the earth as opposed to in terms of their local interests. And so you have problems there. So I look at the bigger issue, which is that the whole world, as we call it, or the whole planet, is involved because of the things affecting climate. So that's the bigger call. In other words, if you get caught at the level of science, you get caught in fatalism. If you get caught at the level of politics, you can get caught in nihilism, how it all is so devastating. It's all, you know, there's a lot of illegitimate stuff going on, and it's endless conflicts and oppositions. So I go to the bigger call, which is to say, in history, we don't have a record of people being aware that the entire world is in danger, and that's the thing to respond to. So, for instance, there's an old African teaching story where in the plains of Africa, the lions are waiting for the herds of gazelle to come. I mean, that's nature.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that old lions keep their roar but lose their teeth, and therefore they lose their bite. This sounds familiar to some of us, but anyway.
Yes, it's sounding very familiar.
So the old lions can't actually capture or bite down and the gazelles, but they can roar. So the old lions are put on one side of the plain, and then the healthy lions are on the other side. And then when the poor gazelle come along, the old lions roar really loud, which scares the gazelles, who run the opposite way and run right into the healthy lions waiting for dinner.
Uh-huh.
And so this was a teaching from the elders to the young people about the world. And then the answer or the conclusion is to say, run towards the roar. So
how do you apply that to our current situation as humans on this collapsing planet?
So the roar is the biggest roar. I mean, there's three roars, let's say. But I think the biggest one is climate crisis, because it affects everyone and every level of being in life. And then maybe the next one is the political, which is really the kind of justice, what do you want to call that? The disparity in economy, you know, lifestyles.
Income inequality.
All the inequalities. And then you have the arising of all the issues some people thought was settled in the 60s, like, you know, misogyny and all kinds of bigotry, and all that stuff is back. And that has to get dealt with in that second level of the kind of roar of politics, or the roar of human culture. And then the third one, I would say, is the roar of truth and meaning. That is to say, you have many forces now going against truth. And one of the places that happens is with climate, where you have denial of the facts, and then the other places where you have denial of the suffering of people and the pretense that one kind of people is better than another and all. So those three levels are all there at once, I think. But the one that appears to me as a call where everyone should get involved, regardless of how they see the political level, is this threat to the entire life of the planet. And that means everybody's children and everybody's grandchildren and so on. But it also means the birds and the fish and all of the animals, like the horses getting caught in these big fires in California. Oh. Something horrifying about that. So then the question becomes, how do I as an individual engage in it? And I call it a transformation of culture or a collective rite of passage where people are called to imagine a different world. In other words, the solutions that are common to the world up until now don't apply. That's what's so scary. And so doing things the way they have been done so far is not the answer. And then what's really scary is the uncertainty of what to do next. And that's a middle ground that is scary to people, but it's the ground in which new ideas and new ways of creating things are found. And so I'll go back to what I was saying at the beginning. The problem isn't the disorder. The disorder is already here, and it's not going away. I think part of the problem is we're told that we shouldn't have that disorder, and that's how you're, what do you want to call them, your dictator, tyrannical, authoritarian type leaders come in and say, you shouldn't have to have this disorder. We're going to go back to a more orderly place in the past. And of course, it's not going to happen. That's the mistake of thinking that there's a heroic solution and someone can solve it for us. It involves everyone. So therefore, the solutions have to come from everyone. You know, we're on Vashon, and there's a girl, there's a boy growing up on Vashon, more than one, who is about to have, rebirthing the forests. It's a tremendous call to participate in the reimagination and the reanimation of the world, which will eventually affect politics and industry.
How do we as individuals overcome the sense that we are dominated by the powerful?
So you could also say the problems exist on the literal world, the world we call the, knock on wood, real world. But the problems then become psychological. They exist on the psychological level. And on the psychological level is, I think, where that issue is, which is, I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
I can't do anything about
helplessness
it.
And despair.
Yeah. Yeah, so part of that is understanding psychology or learning more about psychology. And despair is a word that comes from the French, despere. In the middle of it is S-P-E-R, which is their word for hope. And so despair means to lose hope. Mm. But to understand psychology is to say that people go through loss of hope all the time. And really what happens is you lose your hope for how it was going to be. You know, and that starts pretty early in life. Children start to lose hope sometimes after they are with their parents for a while, just in some families. And certainly young people lose hope when they find out they weren't going to be the big football star, or mm-hmm. they weren't going to be the, you know, the
homecoming queen or whatever.
And you're supposed to lose those hopes.
Yeah.
And some of the hopes that people have been carrying in the more recent world have to get lost. And that means losing the hope that I'm going to retire in some kind of dull comfort. And so what I'm saying to people is, a world falls apart when its youth are rejected and its elders are forgotten. And this call to awaken, to be participating in a reimagination of the world, requires young people's dreams and old people's visions. Forget about retiring. I call it refiring.
Yes.
Awaken to what I can give to life. And there's so many levels of that. I mean, you know, the older people in this country have the majority of the money. And so giving money to meaningful causes that can be very local is one way. But then finding the way to participate, and there's easy ways to participate. There's going to be more tree planting on Vashon and throughout the world. That's one of the ways they have now figured out. It's fairly simple.
Yeah.
Anybody can participate. It actually has great beauty and great meaning. And within 50 years, it's going to have a major effect on the entire earth.
Well, some would say we don't have 50 years to fix this.
That's fatalistic science.
Ah, okay.
I would say I'm not accepting that.
So from a larger perspective, what are you seeing, if anything, in people's attitudes changing toward consumption, which is a big part of what's causing this problem, in terms both generationally and just practically every day?
So the people I've been researching and following, this amazing stuff going on. Turns out the earth can produce much more food than it produces, much more than it ever has produced through industrial agriculture, which is like a big mistake.
Yeah.
Because it's destroying the land, which has a capacity to renew itself many times over. And so I used to worry, because I grew up in the 60s, about the population growth. But the latest studies say that the earth could support many, many more people if it was acting in healthy ways and if it was using, you know, kind of regenerative agriculture is one name for it, where as you grow, you regenerate. And so then if food was more local and therefore it wasn't being shipped around refrigerated and so on and so forth, you now have less carbon going into the air. You have more sustainability at a local level, and you can feed more people. And you're starting to understand that feeding people isn't about some big economic system. It's really about getting back in the system of life that exists at the level of the earth. That's why I call it a transformation of understanding right now. And so there's a lot still to be known. And I think one of the problems with the modern world is the pretension that people know what to do about big things, and there's a plan about to appear. And really, this is where I think it gets troublesome for people. We have to learn to be in the disorder in order to genuinely see what's trying to happen. So I now think of it as the situation on Earth is probably worse than it's being described right now. But the capacity of the earth and nature to renew itself is much greater than is understood right now.
So in order for us to survive mentally, emotionally, psychologically through this chaotic process, what, Michael Mead, do you offer people in your presentation, Chaos, Climate, and Creation, to manage it within themselves? How do we do that?
So there is really a requirement to understand emotions better. And as I like to make the distinction between feeling and emotion. Emotion is overwhelming. I read the latest climate report, or what they're calling, you know, the loss of the decimation, the extinction of insects or something.
Yeah.
And you just go, my God, it's like a whole part of the world disappearing. And it can be despair, loss of hope in that moment. But the thing about emotions is they're supposed to move through us. The word is mostly motion with an E in front of it. And so, and this is before email. But anyway, so the
emotion, yeah.
The emotion is like an email and you let it go through. You don't discount it, but you don't stay in the wind of it and get overwhelmed by it. And so all emotions are messages. And the message of despair is something is being lost, let it go. So that it doesn't mean I don't experience it, but it means I feel it and I don't get stopped in life by it. I mean, it's also helpful to go to a friend and say, did you see this report?
Mm-hmm.
And then the two can kind of commiserate for a while and then say, what are we going to do? It's really helpful to imagine I'm here to do something. And so we've talked about this before,
yes,
because I wrote a book called The Genius Myth, where I was saying it's not the time for heroes anymore. They now exist endlessly in Hollywood. It's the time now for everybody to awaken to their genius. And genius, the word means the spirit already there when you're born. And that means that every girl, every boy, every child born into the world comes in with some genius. And so rather than heroic saving of the planet, it's more about engagement of one's imagination and one's effort towards healing both nature and culture. But I want to stay a little bit focused on this big issue where everyone, so there are people right now who understand things about mycology, the study of mushrooms, that mm-hmm. weren't known before. And it's the potency of it is yet to be realized. There's people that now know much more. I was following this one kind of science speaker who started out as an architect, and then he got into science, soil science. And then he noticed that healthy soil was like cathedrals. And so he calls it the cathedrals of the soil. And he has this beautiful explanation where a cathedral, one of those great cathedral with flying buttresses and
yes.
all that architecture, the beauty isn't simply in the arching of things. It's in the empty spaces caused by that beautiful architecture, which represents, in the case of the cathedral, something like the divine. But he said soil is the same, and it's not supposed to be packed down, and it's supposed to be loose and open, and inside there are pockets of air, which is also how the insects live in there and do their work. And then those pockets also hold water and allow water to move through, so that if you, on a microcosmic level, he calls it the cathedrals of soil. I follow people like that, where there's real knowledge, there's attention to detail, there's evidence and data, and then there's imagination that can get you to see the world differently. So someone like that understands soil. There's other people understand water. People understand you can't just replant trees and use any trees. Like around here, it has to be conifers and mm-hmm. all. And then you have to understand what happens to keep those trees healthy and all that kind of stuff. If we see it as we are part of it and that we are learning from it, then there's a place for everybody to be doing some of the healing. And it's an opportunity to recreate community at a meaningful level, not that we're neighbors living near each other, but that we are communing with each other and with nature. If it isn't that, then yeah, we're in really deep trouble.
We're toast, yeah. So much of this, Michael, requires a dissolution, if you will, of existing systems, yeah. The status quo, and in the 1 minute that we have left, yeah. What can you say about how individuals can stand up to the status quo?
Well, I think to live a meaningful life is automatically standing up to the status quo. In other words, the status quo right now is to call things that are troublesome fake or false. There's an old idea called lived truth. And when a person lives the truth of their life, they begin to connect with other people that are doing that. I don't mean just political truth. I mean what it means to be a woman alive in the world, what it means to be a mother, what it means to be a father trying to imagine how to help the children find their way into the world. Those things that are true because you live into them and you live through them. I think that there's a lived response. And I go back to the word genius, because what happens is when I'm fully awake, I am also directed and aimed from within. Like in my case, it's about story and narrative and myth, which awakened in me at 13 years of age. And I'm still telling stories. And so when I get stuck in despair, I go back to stories as if I'm drinking from the well of memory and imagination. And I don't stay stuck in the despair very long. First of all, I know it's an emotion that is going to pass through. But secondly, my antidote is connected to my nature, which is going to stories. Some people go right to the earth. The earth is not in despair. It's hurting, but it's not in despair.
Thank you, Michael Mead, mythologist and Vashon Islander, who will be presenting his view of today's world in Chaos, Climate, and Creation, November 13th at the Methodist Church, 7 p.m. This has been an Island Extras special episode. I'm Susan McCabe. Thank you for listening.